You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including potential federal funding cuts, forestry workers in Southern Oregon, and updates to a homeless lawsuit in Grants Pass. I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Our reporter Roman Battaglia is out today, but I talked with him yesterday about the impact of possible federal funding cuts in Northern California. Hey, Roman.
Hey there, Jane.
So you tuned into a roundtable discussion held by Northern California Democratic Congressman Jared Huffman this week. Who was he talking to?
Yeah, so he was meeting with a large number of different organizations in Humboldt, Del Norte, and Trinity County, which he covers. That includes different school districts, food banks, housing assistance groups. And the kind of the goal was to hear about how these different groups might be impacted by cuts to their federal funding. You know, nonprofits and these government organizations rely a lot on federal funding. And a lot of these groups are really worried right now because of the atmosphere in the Trump administration right now against federal funding. Recently there was an effort to freeze all federal grants to have them reviewed and make sure they align with the Trump administration. That was blocked by two federal judges in court, but, you know, there's other efforts to cut spending in the federal government. So Huffman essentially went to hear from these different groups to take that with him to Washington and show how these funding cuts could hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So what would some of those major impacts be to these organizations if they saw their funding get cut?
Yeah, I mean, it could be pretty serious. We heard from a number of different school districts that said they're worried about grants that they could lose related to different specialized programs like mental health or special education. You know, one superintendent said that they'd be forced to go back to telehealth like during the pandemic if they lost grant funding, which was just not as effective for students. And they also have problems with staffing special education programs already. So, you know, a loss of funding could hurt them even more. Some organizations are already taking actions to prepare for this. That school district took money out of a bank account controlled by the feds to ensure that it couldn't be taken from them. And we also heard from the Humboldt Resource Conservation District, which does some wildfire prevention projects. And they already decided to not bring back some staff this fall. And they're putting, you know, some projects on hold because they need to save up money in case they lose their federal dollars. So there's a lot of different, you know, worry and anxiety about what could come. You know, not funding hasn't been cut necessarily yet, but they're really worried about what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Another big issue, I think, here is the conflict between the federal government and the state of California. You know, Trump has made it clear that he wants to end the funding of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And that's been seen in his executive actions and memos, which call for defunding them. You know, but California is still very much in support of these programs and they encourage them. So, you know, financial assistance organizations could be caught in this sort of culture war crossfire and get their funding cut because the White House, you know, might say that it's DEI or something. I think a big thing to note is that these financial assistance programs often help people who are the most vulnerable, and often the most vulnerable are these minority groups. Plus, rural places are going to be more impacted than urban ones. So, you know, in Northern California, there's a lot of rural areas which are going to be more heavily impacted because they rely a lot more on federal funding.
Okay. So how likely is it that there will be a federal funding cut in the near future?
Yeah, so I mean, with this administration, it's kind of hard to anticipate what's going to happen. But based on what we've seen, you know, it's clear that Trump wants to slash federal spending significantly. I think that a major thing that we should be looking at related to this is the federal funding deadline in March. Congress has until March 14th to pass a bill to fund the government again, or we could face, you know, another shutdown. And so there's two major things to think about there. One is we're going to have to see if Trump tries to get any of his, you know, spending cuts done through this bill. And that could be a more, you know, legal way of getting those cuts. The bill also needs at least some Democrats to support it. These budget bills need a two-thirds majority in Congress. So that means that Democrats are going to have some negotiating power to secure funding or kind of force Trump's hand a little bit on this stuff. So we'll have to see, you know, if they'll try and get some stuff done with these spending talks to maybe secure funding for different groups or things like that.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what happens before that March deadline. Thanks so much, Roman.
Yeah, thanks, Jane.
So, right. Jane.
Oh, Justin, we're going to turn to you now. You had a feature this week, your second feature, actually, about who's doing forestry work in our region. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sorry for interrupting you there. So my last feature looked at what forestry labor looked like in the state and region 50 years ago. We're talking about work that it's officially called labor-intensive forestry, and it's all the non-logging work, so tree planting or fuels reduction, things like that. In the 70s and 80s, much of it was being done by a large worker cooperative called the Hodads that were based in Oregon. You can check out my past reporting on our website for that story. But this latest feature is about what overtook that model, and that is private businesses called contractors that bid on these federal contracts for forestry work. What I found that I think was very interesting is that these contractors rely very heavily on workers with H-2B visas. Mm-hmm. So those are seasonal work visas for foreigners, this country's guest worker program. And the vast majority of those forestry guest workers are from Latin America. They're called Pineros. This work is important, especially with the threat of wildfire. These workers are thinning trees and understory to lessen fire hazard. And a lot of federal money is spent on it. And so this was just just very interesting to me. That seems like Pineros from places like Mexico are doing most of this work around the area. And that fact can kind of be hidden because these people are obviously out in the forest mm-hmm. and the backcountry when they work. But if you go to some neighborhoods like in South Medford where they're based, you see all these white vans, which are called crummies with these workers. That's what they call them. And those vans transport these workers to job sites. There's this laundromat where I visited that's popular for Paneros to go. Around there is like check cashing places and Mexican grocers and things. So for the story, I kind of walked around there with a translator because I don't speak Spanish and then just talked to Pineros about their experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you mentioned South Medford and then you say in your story that Jackson County is really a center for this industry.
Yeah, so last year the federal government certified around 13,000 H-2B visas for this sort of forestry work, and contractors in Jackson County accounted for over a quarter of those, so over 3,000 visas, and that's just wow. last year. And that's by far the highest in the whole country. The mm-hmm. second was like somewhere in Mississippi, I believe, which didn't come close. It's grown. So since 2018, that number has grown by over 40%, the number of H-2B visas that have been certified in this county. I spoke with a researcher who wrote a book about this industry, and she kind of explained how this happened. So basically, migrant agricultural workers have been in this region for a long time, picking crops like pears, which the Rogue Valley is known for. Mm-hmm. And they started transitioning into forestry work sometime in the 80s. At that time, most were undocumented. And contractors hired them because they were cheaper. But there's this huge shift in 1986 when Reagan passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which gave citizenship to many living in the country illegally, like those undocumented workers. And what happened is that those formerly undocumented migrants started their own contracting businesses when they became citizens. Which, again, I found very interesting. Mm-hmm. I found my reporting interesting. That's good. So around 55 contractors are just in Jackson County, and these are contractors that have had H-2B visa requests certified, and that's in the last 7 years. Around 80% of those are identified by the federal government as Hispanic-owned. So it's really dominated mm-hmm. by Latinos. And they've gotten over $879 million in federal contracts. So... and just a note, these numbers took many hours looking at government spreadsheets to calculate, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there's a lot of history there for sure. And you also bring up in your story that some people have criticized this industry for how these guest workers are treated. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so labor advocates say these contractors can more easily exploit foreign workers, not provide mm-hmm. proper training or safety supplies, not pay a fair wage, for example, to like if they're driving to a job site, that driving time isn't included in their paycheck, things like that. Recently, a former Pinero sued three Rogue Valley businesses for $42 million wow. after an accident, and that lawsuit claims the worker was using a chainsaw, which is common, without proper training when a tree limb injured his spinal cord. So I did a public records request for the Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Division, and according to their records, that agency has only inspected four of these contractors in the state since 2020, so four out of over 50, and three of those inspections happened after a complaint. Which, to be fair, Oregon's OSHA has, you know, limited resources, and these crews are very mobile. They're hard to reach, so it can be difficult to check in on them. But an issue also that, you know, I spoke with some experts, and an issue that they told me is that the system of contract bidding for forestry work makes things like safety violations more common. So federal contracts often go to the lowest bidder, who can do it for less money. I spoke with Marco Bay about that, and he's the founder of the nonprofit Lomakotsi Restoration Project, which partners with federal agencies and contractors for this kind of forestry work.
Service providers generally, in what we would call the low bid kind of universe, will often have to cut corners. And sometimes those corners, unfortunately, become the well-being and the safety of the workers on the ground.
Although, you know, Bay's careful to not paint a picture that all these contractors are just endangering and ripping off their workers. It's a lot of different scenarios and a lot of gray areas. But the system in which these contractors are operating makes things like safety violations more likely. That's his point. Also, I will say the Panero I spoke with for the story says he didn't have any complaints. He's from Mexico. He's been doing this work for 6 years. It helps him support his family back home. And he says the work is pretty hard, but he likes it, and he plans to renew his visa again this year.
Okay. So the Trump administration has promised a crackdown on undocumented immigrants in this country. Do we know if he's going to target this H-2B visa program then?
We don't know yet. Things have been changing pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously some supporters of his administration would like to see this program targeted. They argue that these jobs should be going to citizens. H-2B visas are meant to go to businesses that have trouble hiring Americans. But in practice, I don't know how often these contractors are actually trying to hire locally. Again, they can pay guest workers less than citizens. I will note, last time in office, Trump actually increased the number of guest worker visas available. And he said in multiple interviews that his hotels and businesses really rely off these workers too.
Yeah, we'll have to follow that and see what happens. And Justin, as you said, you spent a lot of work on these two features, and they're both on our website at ijpr.org, so you can go check out that work.
Thanks. So Jane, turning to you, you tuned into a roundtable discussion held by Northern California Democratic Congressman Jared Huffman this week. Who was he talking to?
Sorry, I think you're reading a different question for our colleague, Roman. I did a story this week about a new lawsuit against the city
homeless
of Grants Pass.
Right. Yeah, we'll homeless go to that lawsuit. One. So you wrote a story this week about an update to a new lawsuit against the city of Grants Pass over its treatment of homeless people. What happened there?
Yeah, so you actually had done a little bit of reporting about this last week, so I'm kind of picking up with a new update this week. So there was a lawsuit against the city of Grants Pass that's currently ongoing. It's been brought by five homeless plaintiffs and this disability rights group, which is called Disability Rights Oregon, and the lawsuit's being brought over the city's treatment of homeless people. Basically, they're claiming that the city's treatment of these homeless residents is violating state law and discriminating against homeless people, things like that. And so the news this week is that a Josephine County judge has issued a temporary restraining order, which happened on Monday, and it's lasting for 2 weeks. And so during that time, the city can't enforce its public camping laws. You can't cite or ticket homeless people for camping.
And can you give us some background on this? You've been reporting on this topic for a while.
Yeah, so it's not the city's first lawsuit over its treatment of homeless people. Last June, the city actually won a different case over its treatment of homeless people after the Supreme Court ruled in its favor. But the city still has to follow Oregon state law, which says that cities' public camping regulations have to be objectively reasonable. That term isn't really defined. In this case, obviously, the homeless plaintiffs are claiming the city is violating that state law. They also say they're violating Oregon's non-discrimination law. The city had two homeless campsites in the city where people were allowed to be, but they recently shut down one of them and restricted the hours of the other one. So there's only one legal campsite. It's only open in the evening. So there's no place where people can camp during the day without facing penalties. I will say that the city's police chief, attorney, and mayor didn't respond to requests for comment. The city manager said the city is, quote, actively reviewing all aspects to ensure we make the best decisions for our community.
And so what happens next?
We'll have to see. The court case is ongoing, but for almost the next 2 weeks, you know, it started on Monday, homeless people can't be cited, arrested, fined, prosecuted for camping in the city. And the city council has been having a meeting. They had a workshop on Monday to discuss services for homeless people and future goals. So they are sort of working on this problem. And that's going to do it for this week's debrief. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. You can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.